The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is Wednesday, and it is big news Wednesday surrounding college football and the Big Ten. Kevin Nagandi alongside David Pollock, and it's great to have our college sports insider, Adam Rittenberg, joining us here on this breaking news. Over an hour ago, the Big Ten held their news conference, and Kevin Warren and we saw presidents, ADs, as well as medical advisors speak out in this news conference to answer questions. Adam, first off, let's start with you. What's the difference? What changed from August 11th and then double downing a week later to this decision that the Big Ten is coming back October 23rd and they're going to try to play 8 to 9 games this upcoming season?
Right. Well, the medical information changed. That was the message that came through pretty clearly from League Commissioner Kevin Warren, from Northwestern President Maury Shapiro, who chairs their whole board of presidents and chancellors. I think if the rapid testing, if there was more confidence around the availability and the reliability of rapid testing back in early August, they never would have postponed or been so definitive with it, because here we are in mid-September and rapid testing is coming, and it's coming quickly, and it should ease a lot of the concerns that some of the schools had around contact tracing, which is a huge problem in college football, whether teams are playing right now or not. So that largely goes away, according to Dr. Jim Borchers from Ohio State, who was instrumental, in my view, in getting the Big Ten back on the field. So medical information changed, and I just think there's greater confidence that there won't be large outbreaks when the Big Ten gets back on the field, starts padded practices, ultimately starts competition. Now, it's a pretty tight window. I thought there would be some flexibility maybe with a week, but starting the weekend of October 23rd, 24th, 8 consecutive weeks followed by a championship week, which we know now will feature a bunch of cross-division games. All the divisions will be seeded, so there'll be a ninth game, but obviously a Big Ten championship game between the winners of each division. So they're trying to pack this in. I just, you kind of wonder whether they just should have waited a little bit longer to see how the medical information would change in August.
The biggest issue that came when they announced was the heart issue, was they had information about the heart issue. How has that changed, by the way? How has that issue been addressed? And it would, like, yeah, I know you're talking about contact tracing and testing, but their big thing was the heart. So how has that changed?
No doubt. Yeah, great question. I should have answered that in the first one. But yeah, they say comprehensive cardiac testing for all athletes that are diagnosed with COVID-19, and a 21-day hold that you will not be back on the field for at least 21 days after you're diagnosed with COVID-19 until you complete all of these, what they call labs and biomarkers, and an EKG, a cardiac MRI. They want to make sure that when someone returns to the field after having COVID-19, that there's absolutely no evidence of myocarditis or any other heart issues. That was certainly a concern the first time around. You know, Morty Shapiro from Northwestern saying the medical information changed. I think the confidence around that element certainly changed between early August and today.
Okay, there's one other thing that we're seeing as well. We're seeing games being played, but we're also seeing games being postponed, which brings us back to trying to jam 8 to 9 games with no flexibility. If the positivity rate for the team is above 5%, no games, practices for 7 days, this to me is going to be the biggest challenge, right? You finally move forward here, but then you have no flexibility. Are they aware that potentially, or have they discussed the idea that they may have only 7 games, or there's certain teams that are playing only 7 games this season, the Big Ten? And then how does that affect the possibility of the conversation with playoffs?
Right. Well, if anything is possible, I think that's what they've learned throughout this process. However, there is confidence with Dr. Borchers saying today that because of the daily testing and limiting the chances for large outbreaks and identifying when people are contagious, when they have the virus, they don't believe that it's a situation that would wipe out large swaths of the roster. I mean, that's why you're seeing the postponement now throughout college football. It's not because there's 40 positive tests. It's because there's 5 positive tests and maybe everybody's been on the plane with everybody else. So they're all wiped out because of contact tracing, because of the daily rapid. That is the single biggest piece along with the greater confidence around the cardiac elements. But the fact is, they don't believe this is going to lead to large outbreaks. They believe they will be able to get all their games in. But as you said, if they don't, it really makes it difficult, because if you're talking about a team with 10 games on its resume or even 9 versus one that has only 7 or 6, it's hard to give that that 6 or 7 game team much consideration for the CFP.
Well, also, let's keep this in mind, too. As of now, there's no minimum game requirement from the College Football Playoff Committee. The committee chooses, the selection committee has the choice, and then the only requirement is the bowl eligibility under NCAA standards. So again, we are living in a world where everything's going to be adjusted. The next question is, because again, this is an evolving situation, is how about guys like Sean Wade? How about guys like Wyatt Davis, who opted out? Micah Parsons, who opted out? Are you hearing anything about the idea of opting now back in with the opportunity to play?
Well, there is certainly hope among coaches I've talked to that some of those players would consider opting back in. The challenge is, if they've signed with an agent, they would need to get some type of fast track waiver from the NCAA to be able to opt back in. If they haven't signed with an agent, you saw that earlier this week with Neil Farrell at LSU. He opted back in after opting out in August. So while there's hope, I think if those athletes have signed with agents and they've sort of made their decisions, I don't know how realistic it is to expect to see a Micah Parsons or a Rondale Moore or even a Sean Wade back on the field. But there's some decisions to make. And I would imagine if they apply for that waiver under these circumstances, there's a pretty good chance that they would get it.
Why not start sooner? I don't get it, because we have a lot of teams that have been very much, you know, following the 12-hour rule or whatever, been meeting, been conditioning, been together. Why not get this thing started October 17th? Why not hit the middle of the month or a little bit earlier to try to get football going? They'd all be in the same shoes if they're playing their own Big Ten schedule. Everybody would be playing on an even field.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be October 17th, David. I think the fact is some of these testing protocols and systems may not be fully in place until the end of the month. And then you have certain places in the league where you have still very restrictive area contact tracing. So here in Illinois, for example, where I live, there's no high school football. Illinois and Northwestern can't do a whole lot until they get around some of those issues. And to have true preseason practices, padded practices, meaningful practices, I think they need to get all this in place, get around all of the local contact tracing restrictions, and then get everyone on the field. Because one thing that was discussed earlier in this process was, well, the teams that can play are going to play, and the teams that won't may opt out. Clearly, the message today is this is a unanimous decision. All 14 teams, including the Rutgers and Maryland's and Northwestern's and Illinois's and everywhere, might have some issues with their local health departments, are going to try to put in that extra week of preparation. I mean, you have Wisconsin right now that's still on I think in the middle of their 2-week pause of activities. They should get back next week. This gives them a full month to get ready for the season. And I don't think every team in the league has been doing the same level in that 12 hours. Some have been doing almost full practices. Others have been doing, from what I'm told, almost nothing to as far as really getting ready for the season. So this gives everybody more than a month, essentially, to prepare and be ready to go the weekend of October 23rd, 24th.
So we've got daily antigen testing, the enhanced cardiac screening. Safety, of course, was the biggest topic, with the Big Ten making their decision when they made their decision on August 11th and then doubling down 8 days later. Adam, your reporting's been fantastic. I just want to get your vibe here. How much does the role of peer public pressure play into something like this decision by the Big Ten, as well as pressure within the conversation of the presidents discussing, the chancellors discussing, and getting the feedback that they've gotten in the last few weeks, not just from the medical side, but also the other side of, we're watching games now and we do not have a plan to come back? How much did that play a role, do you think?
It's impossible to ignore all of that, whether it was coaches or parents of players or the president of the United States or other politicians saying, we want you guys to get back on the field. Why aren't you back on the field? These other leagues are playing. Why are you not? What am I supposed to tell my players if I'm a coach in the Big Ten? You can't ignore that. But from the presidential standpoint, again, these are people that are making decisions for images. These are people that have to rely on medical information for that. You know, Northwestern's Morty Shapiro is saying today that that was the reason. It was not political pressure. It was nothing else but the fact that the medical information changed and improved significantly from early August to now. Now, we certainly could debate whether the league's medical group should have been more optimistic back in August and said, hey, we think this is going to get better relatively soon. Let's not go right to postponement. Let's reassess this in 10 days or 2 weeks. I think that's what they should have done, but they didn't. They came out with a strong negative message to Commissioner Kevin Warren that he referenced on today's call. That happened on August 7th. By the 11th, the league was fully postponed. That period of time will be looked at for a very long time. But the bottom line is the Big Ten does feel now comfortable that they can go forward safely and have a season. And that's certainly good news for everybody that loves the Big Ten.
Adam, excellent work. I know you got to continue to follow this story as we tape literally during the back end of the press conference. Appreciate you joining us here on this suddenly fluid day in the Big Ten and in college football. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Pollock, you know, we've got statements coming in left and right. I'll read one from Jim Harbaugh on the season. Great news today. Over the past month, I could sense the anticipation from our players and coaches. I'm thrilled on their behalf that they'll have a chance to play a 2020 season. Stay positive, test negative. Let's play football. So we're going to have more and more statements come in. If you're wondering about tickets, the Big Ten hasn't decided on public sale of tickets. They're looking into how to accommodate players' families for home and away
games.
They don't want
to make an announcement and have to change their mind.
Exactly. The daily testing will occur for all of the league's fall sports athletes, according to Kevin Warren. This is a great day. I say it's a great day because it feels like the medical board and the medical information and the progress of understanding the virus continues and they approve it. But we come back to two of the big things that happened when the decision was made by the Big Ten in August. Why now? Why can't we just wait a little bit longer? And the lack of transparency in the communication. We are seeing a lot of that communication come out and that transparency play out right now, which is a good thing, I think, for all of us when we have the same questions like, what changed? I don't understand what changed. It'll benefit the league. It'll benefit, honestly, the entire narrative. It's just good to have football. I'm with you, though. October 17th, I wish they started playing.
Let's just put this in a nutshell. The Big Ten screwed up.
Oh yeah.
I mean, they did a really poor job of they gave validity and all validity to a flawed study. I mean, let's be honest, that's what it is. I mean, they did a poor job of reading the tea leaves. And by the way, even if that was the case and this study came out and this study was 100% correct, it still could have, you go to the doctor, "Hey doc, look at my arm. I think I broke it." "Okay, I broke it." "You broke it. Put it in a sling." "Okay, go to another doctor. You need surgery." Like, at least get multiple opinions on something before you make this huge decision. So it was a bad job by them. It wasn't the best start, obviously, to Kevin Warren's tenure as Big Ten commissioner. I mean, I wouldn't want to be in his position anyways. I mean, good Lord, it's an unenvious position to be in. But the bottom line is they came to the right decision. I just hope it can play out because the timetable doesn't look good. I mean, we've seen the testing now and we've seen the cancellations. We've seen the postponements. I think, you know, you're still looking at and by the way, Kevin, it's 2 weeks a lot of times when you have something go wrong, not just one. And when you're playing back to back for 8 weeks and it's only an 8-game schedule, you find out on Thursday things went wrong. You're out for that Saturday and the next Saturday. I mean, there's obviously a lot still to go right for the Big Ten to play football, but at least we're making steps in the right direction by using proper data and proper information.
Now, we got a statement coming from the Pac-12, Commissioner Larry Scott saying, "At this time, our universities in California and Oregon do not have approval from state or local public health officials to start contact practice. We're hopeful that our new daily testing capability can help satisfy public health officials' approvals in California and Oregon to begin contact practice and competition. We're equally monitoring the devastating fires and air quality in our region at this time. We're eager for our student athletes to have the opportunity to play this season as soon as it can be done safely in accordance with public health authority approvals. I come back to something you and I discussed last week, right? And Herbie brought it up as well. If you're in the state of Ohio and you look around, you see Cincinnati's playing, you see the football teams, the Browns and the Bengals are playing, you're seeing high school football play out and Ohio State can't play. If you're in Pennsylvania and you're seeing Pitt and the Steelers and the Eagles and potentially Temple and other schools trying to get on board to play and Penn State can't play, it's the same question here when you're seeing the ability of the Rams playing in the actual state of California just recently on Sunday night, and you have this issue in the 49ers conversation of them playing as well. You have professional teams and baseball teams playing in that state, and now the question comes to the universities being allowed to play, and will they have the daily testing capability to satisfy everybody long-term here to make a decision to maybe join the mix in this conversation sooner than later?
Basically, the Pac-12 is going to fall even more behind college football than they already are. I mean, if you think about it, they're already lagging way behind, and the numbers support it. I'm not a Pac-12 hater. It's realistic. They haven't been a contributor in the playoffs. They haven't been a factor. So now you're going to take them off the national stage, take them out of the season. Now you got ESPN, 300 top recruits visiting these different campuses, different teams that are going to make their decisions, seeing the difference of atmospheres, all the teams playing football except for you. And do you want to get it started later? You're going to play each other and have your own little league afterwards? When they had the Big Ten, they at least had a shot. You know, now the Pac-12 is on an island, and it's not an island I would want to be on.
What is the minimum you think? Again, you brought it up just now, and I think it's going to be a huge storyline. And teams in the SEC, in the ACC, in the Big 12 can kind of look side-eye here. What do you think is the minimum for a team in the Big 10 to play to be considered in the conversation of the playoff? Is it 7 games? Is it 6 games? Because at one point, I'm not sure they're going to be able to play 8 to 9 games.
Yeah. And the thing that stinks to me, it's more quality over quantity. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Like, listen, if Ohio State misses Northwestern and dodges Illinois, okay. If they played Michigan, Michigan State, Wisconsin, if they still played a lot of really good teams in their league, and it would make more sense to me. Does that make sense? I think I'd rather see them play. You know, as long as I see them play the top competition, but
so you're going eye test. This is where the committee plays a huge role, right? The eye test.
My God, we're in an eye test world, anyways. Mm-hmm. The resumes have all come down so equally a lot of times, and that's what we're coming down to, anyways. This is definitely a different deal. Ohio State's kind of looked at differently than everybody else, by the way. I think Ohio State and Michigan both playing 8 games and is totally different. If they didn't play each other, and Michigan's undefeated, but they didn't play Ohio State, they're not looked at the same way as Ohio State is. Ohio State has already been on record. By the way, this is going to be very interesting to me. On record saying this is the best team I've ever been a part of, Ryan Day. Well, now you got to go out and prove it, by the way. Like now you got to answer to those questions because you were fighting so hard to play, you know, making those comments. I think it's going to be strange, man. I don't think there's a clearly defined answer, but, you know, you're definitely going to have to play some good teams if you want to put in the college football playoff. Otherwise, you're going against the Sun Belt, by the way, who just had 3 Big 12 wins this past week. You know, like, I mean, it's going to be nuts, man.
It's going to be nuts. You know what? That should be the slogan for the college football season 2020. It's going to be nuts. The next question is the opt-ins and the opt-outs. And I'm going to begin here with Wyatt Davis and Sean Wade, specifically Sean Wade, because considering his father leading the charge and parents protesting outside of the Big Ten headquarters. And literally this week, Sean Wade opting out, right? And he doesn't want that last game.
Big Ten-esque, by the way.
The targeting play, right? The targeting
Big Ten-esque for Sean Wade, by the way. Why would you jump the gun and say it now after all of this time when you know the Big Ten's meeting about possibly playing? Like, so now you're going to have to readdress and re-answer again. But, I mean, listen, Kevin, if I can't play for a championship, I understand the opt-outs. I completely get it, man. Why play a shortened season with the if, ands, or buts if I'm just going to play Pac-12 teams and it's just us doing our own little tournament thing? If I can win a natty with the sour taste I have left in my mouth from last season from Clemson beating me and the sour taste I have the last several years when I do make it to the playoffs not performing well, 100%, I think they're in. I don't think they waited this long because they didn't want to play. I think they wanted to play, and I think we'll see Wyatt Davis. I think we'll see Sean Lane.
All right. I hope we do. I think it just benefits the conversation, but at the same time, I respect and understand the players' decisions if they do decide to opt out because they want to get ready for bigger things and they want to protect themselves long term. But again, if you're outspoken and all you wanted the opportunity was the chance to play, that opportunity is here just days after you're making a decision. Again, it is his decision with his family. But it will be something to keep an eye on. And it's something to keep an eye on with Ohio State because when you look at Ohio State, they're the cream of the crop of this conference. And after that, is it Penn State's in the conversation? They don't have Micah Parsons, who many believe and you believe is the best defensive player in the country coming into this season. After that, is there a gap where who follows in the Big Ten? Are we still with Wisconsin here? Are we discussing Minnesota? Where is Michigan in this conversation? How do you see this play out? And again, I'm asking you this off the top of your head right now.
Well, I mean, it's what we do, bro. Come on, it's Ohio State and everybody mm-hmm. else. Let's be honest. I mean, that's what we've seen. And by the way, the talent discrepancy shows that. I mean. Look at the NFL draft every single year. It's insane. Ohio State recruits on another level, and they have kids that are on another level. They have Justin Fields, the Heisman Trophy, who's now going to be one of the front runners for the Heisman Trophy. They have so much defensive talent. They have it's unfair.
And Trey Sermon, Oklahoma running back, going there, right?
Yeah, it's just not fair. It's not fair that it's an embarrassment of riches. So now we start talking about everybody else. Penn State's done a good job of being a thorn in their side. You know, they've played them tough. Michigan's kind of played them tough somewhat, you know, a couple years ago, but they've lost 8 straight to the Buckeyes. Michigan State, where are they at now? Wisconsin, where are they at this year now without Jonathan Taylor? You know, it's Ohio State. I mean, that's all I can say is they're the commanding leader in the clubhouse all the time. Every time they take the field, we're going to think that we think they're going to win. Everybody else from the pecking order is going to be shuffled, I think, yearly. And this year, if you want to give me Michigan as the number two team, I won't complain. If you want to give me Wisconsin as the number two team, I won't complain. But I think it would be a Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Penn State type of order if you're going to make me pick now.
Yeah. So the usual suspects. And again, it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. I'm just happy we get the chance to talk about potential, right? And all these scenarios, right? And a year ago, Minnesota surprised people. Could that team be Nebraska this year, right? Like, it's just fun to talk about on the field, and that's where we're at right now with the Big Ten.
Are you jumping on the Husker bandwagon? I mean, come on. Give me some context to that. Are we on it? Let's go.
I don't know because, again, Adrian Martinez is always the wild card. and with Adrian Martinez, you can't count on anything when it comes to consistency on the field and making smart decisions. So
if it's a wild
football
card,
and his health, right?
Well, at this point, it's not a wild card anymore. You know, at this point, he is wild. You know, I mean, it's just going to be, it is what it is. I think the consistent, I will say this though, big seasons for Big Ten coaches. And who am I talking about? It's a big season for Michigan. Like Michigan's at a point now where we're like, is Harbaugh the guy or not? Like, I've seen spurts of greatness. I've seen recruiting pick up. Is it going to go to the next level? Who are we just talking about next on that list? Like James Franklin is another guy. I think he's got his team to a point. And he talked about elite versus good. You know, he talked about that a couple years ago. Is their team elite? Are they on that cusp of being elite or going to the next level? Like, I think there's a bunch of coaches like Scott Frost that is, where is this team? Year two, some people put them in the playoffs last year. They were abysmal. It was an awful season. Recruiting's been kind of picking up. Where does this team go? By the way, Lovie Smith will be fun to watch this year. They look like a team that had a heartbeat, that had a pulse, that offensively – to have guys in place this next season to be another team that could be good. Defensively, you saw them create turnovers like loving Chicago teams. Can they be a fun, you know, thorn in the side for people? So I think there's interesting headlines that the Big Ten now listen, I don't know if it's a season that we just say, hey, this is a wash and everybody gets a free pass, but I think there's some coaches that are going to be judged on this season moving forward that can they do it or not?
Okay, and we've got plenty of time to discuss more Big Ten and understanding who's playing, who's going to be coming back in the next couple of the next month. But right now, this coming weekend, game day, Louisville-Miami, which is going to be pretty exciting considering how we saw Miami last week. What are your first impressions on a matchup here? I like both quarterbacks a lot. I think they're going to be showcased, no doubt. But what do you want to see hypothetically from De'Ara King in this Miami offense?
You know, I went back and watched, you know, every snap of his game. And here's what I'll say. He's got some great plays. He's also got some plays when you're like, dude, throw the ball. Like, get rid of it. Throw it. So I think you want to see consistency within the pocket from him. You want to see him be able to continue to evolve and go through progressions and beat you from the pocket. But there's nobody that scares the bejesus out of me more in college football than him. I mean, he can pull it down and break six tackles in no time. And it's just there's nothing you can do. He just scares you defensively with his ability to make absolute game-breaking plays. And, you know, the interesting thing about Miami's offense last week, watching them, was De'Ara King obviously is a stud. I mean, he's been a game breaker. Who comes alongside of him and continues to wreck people? Because it's amazing that King broke so many tackles last week. You know, he forced five missed tackles last week, and then you got Cameron Harris, who forced, like, I think it was, he had 134 yards or something like that after contact. So if those guys are continuing to make plays after contact, like, it's going to be fun to watch Miami with the up-tempo offense and to see if it continues to develop, because their line isn't that strong. It's not their strong point of their offense. So I think watching that side of the ball, and then Louisville offense has been, you know, just unbelievable. The improvement the last two seasons.
They play tough for Satterfield. That's what
Satterfield's done. Well, they have an identity. Like, they know who they are. They take care of the football. Cunningham takes care of the football. He's a play. There's no better league in college football than the ACC at quarterbacks. I mean, we can go down to Hendon Hooker, like Chase Bryce. Like, it's insane. Cunningham, King, and then we're not even talking about Trevor Lawrence at the top. I mean, it's insane. This league is
Sam Howell.
I mean, it's just insane. It's an insane league for quarterbacks.
Yeah. Well, when you watch tape about Mikael Cunningham, I mean, 343 last time out, three touchdowns. What do you see when you watch Cunningham?
Wait a minute. You think that's good? I mean,
yeah.
344? Like, that's, I mean,
343, three touchdowns. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah. And guess what? Now we start to talk about Heisman odds. Like, by the way, did you know that De'Ara King is number two in Heisman odds?
Yeah. How did you know that? We talked about that last week.
Yeah, I mean, that's nuts. Oh, that's right. We did talk about that. I forget what I'm talking about. But Cunningham's obviously he's starting to be get the respect he deserves. He's a dual threat kid. He's not enormous, but takes care of the football, can break tackles, can evade. Like, if you're watching Cunningham, he's going to continue to develop and continue to grow. But you can tell he knows what he's doing with the football. Last year, you know, I think it was 22 touchdowns, like five interceptions. So he a guy that can play off schedule and on schedule, and an offense that knows who they are. By the way, Atwell too is a ridiculous playmaker. They have and a fun piece that they can do a lot of different things with, running the football, throwing the football, big time playmaker out wide. So I think, listen, he's really good. He's only going to continue to grow and get better, but can play in the pocket, can play outside the pocket, can make plays off script. I think he's got an insanely bright future. He's not De'Ara King explosive, but he's definitely explosive enough to extend plays and run the football and make extra plays.
Taylor, you notice, you know, a week ago we had Herbie on, and Paul gave me the business for not paying attention to what Herbie said. I appreciate that. Pollock's doesn't pay attention to what we talk about at length last week when it comes to Heisman odds. Good stuff by you.
I have so many other podcasts that are this,
a little flex here at the end of the podcast with your name on it. Hey, have fun. Game day, Louisville, Miami. That's the ABC primetime game. Appreciate it, brother, jumping on and getting this in off the breaking news of the Big Ten. Stay safe. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, dude.
And a big thanks to Adam Rittenberg for joining us here off the breaking news in the Big Ten. Coming back as well as, of course, David Pollack each and every Wednesday or Thursday here on the podcast to get you ready for the weekend. We'll talk more about the games next week. We thought the breaking news today was much bigger than anything else and setting some clarity and potentially some talking points about the Big Ten as we get ready for more football, which is just a great thing. Once again, big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, our producer who makes sure everything is taken care of and locks in our schedules and lines everything up. And we will be back to our regularly scheduled podcast next Monday with Herb Street joining us after his call on Monday Night Football. Chris Fowler and Pollack, of course, being Pollack. And we'll see you on Monday. Want more football? Stay safe, stay healthy, wear a mask.
Seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.